Hello and welcome to Film Club. My name is Jeff Yance. I'm the program director at the Loft Cinema. And once again, I am here with sometimes filmmaker Heather Lattis.
Hello.
And multimedia artist Rusty Boulay-Stevenson.
Hi there.
And we're going to be film clubbing today with the disaster genre. This is our part two of a two-part series on disaster films. We had a great discussion last time about the 1970s heyday of the disaster films.
The death of it.
Talk a little bit about the Poseidon Adventure, the Airport series, Towering Inferno, all the classics.
And Airplane.
Which clubbed the disaster movie because it so perfectly mocked it. But then they came back with a vengeance, and this time it was personal. Because it, I don't know why, but it was.
Because it was the 90s.
Everything was personal. So in the late 90s, we had the resurgence. So we had, I think it was in 96, we had Twister, we had Independence Day, we had Armageddon.
Deep Impact,
Volcano.
Volcano and Dante's Peak, which came out at like 2 months apart, like Deep Impact.
And that's an interesting thing to talk about. We generally had these in pairs, two films about the same disaster that came out the same time. So we had Volcano and Dante's Peak, yes.
Yeah.
Armageddon and Deep Impact. Independence Day and Mars Attacks.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was a real trend. But the disaster films of the 90s, of the rebirth era, were a nod back to the 70s, but also different in a way. Yes?
Definitely.
So Heather, maybe tell me a little bit about what your favorite 90s disaster film
well,
is.
Well, you mentioned Twister, which is another one of my favorite.
So good.
Cow. Yeah, I think that's the same cow. Mm-hmm. So Armageddon and Deep Impact are one of the two favorites that I have. Armageddon has a lot of the classic formula of the 70s. It has an all-star cast. It has comic relief. It has montages. I think the montages is more 90s than it was 70s.
Yes.
But they go into the montage of preparing. So that was part of the new formula of the 90s. It had such great stars, Bruce Willis, Liv Tyler, Billy Bob Thornton.
Aerosmith.
I mean, the soundtrack. Yes. That's the other thing. The soundtrack of the 90s movies are amazing.
Power ballads. All over.
Rock. Twister is a good one for that.
Yes.
Armageddon is a prime example. And it's Michael Bay who has his own formula that he works with.
Yes.
Exploding everything.
Well, he repeats it a lot in movies. He does a lot of the montage-y, very American, shots of Americana, Midwest, fields of wheat.
Flags waving in the background.
Implying that we're fighting for this. They're going to save the earth because this is what they're, we're saving us and our American soul, that kind of
thing. And then he went on to make Pearl Harbor, which was also a disaster film in many ways, in many respects. And then, of course, Team America, World Police, had the song Michael Bay Sucks.
Right.
Which totally nailed all of the cliches that he brings to the table for sure. So what about Deep Impact?
Deep Impact was – I can't remember the movie companies, but there was a lot of news at the time of them kind of dueling who was going to release first. I know that Armageddon had a better box office than Deep Impact did. Mm. I can't remember which sequence they went in, but I remember watching both in the theaters, and there's much less people in Deep Impact than there were in Armageddon. Armageddon was packed.
Yeah.
And Deep Impact was really good, and I think more like the 70s in that – it was more storylines of people and how the individual storylines of how they were dealing with the disaster that was impending.
Right.
Still a great cast.
Yeah. So all-star cast, Hay Leone, Morgan Freeman,
Robert Duvall, Elijah Wood,
a young Jon Favreau, which still kills me because he's one of the astronauts. And I always, who would have thought Jon Favreau was going to be an astronaut?
Not me.
But
Morgan Freeman.
Mm. And it has the classic. Deep Impact is more classic one because the classic astronauts, there was none of this rock and roll, let's hire these oil drillers like an Armageddon to save the day. This was let's have these real old school astronauts save the day.
Yeah.
And then you see, the different storylines like Tay Leone, how she's dealing with, you know, her family, how the individuals, Elijah Wood and his family, how, you know, he got special treatment because he discovered that the asteroid was coming. But in the end, they weren't going to let his whole family do it. And I mean, that's such a great storyline. And they squeeze it in. And it, one could kind of say, like, they did too much. Maybe that's why Deep Impact didn't do as well as Armageddon, because it didn't stick to more of the more intense kind of storyline. Right. They went to more human storyline.
And it had no power ballad, I believe.
Yes, no power ballad.
That could have been the problem.
So the commercial didn't have Aerosmith. That's going to be a problem.
Right.
It was more thinky, right? It was more of a thinking person's disaster movie. And that's where I tend to want to go if I'm going to watch movies in general. And those don't make as much. I mean, I think it shows what's going to happen 10 years, 20 years later, right? As we progress as a society, the things that don't make you think as much sell a whole lot more.
Yeah. And I think, like, more people died and, you know, they didn't really, like, go over that. But, you know, when the East Coast is flooding, you know, many people are dying.
Yes.
And they don't really go over that kind of stuff in Armageddon. It's mostly, I mean, and if as a young film student is when I saw Armageddon. And the lighting is so great. Like, when they're in the space shuttle, the lighting is so great and beautiful. It's just clean. There's, like, effects lighting. And the cinematography is great. And Deep Impact is good. But it didn't appeal to me at the time like Armageddon did as Flash. Like, it wasn't flashy. It was more traditional. So.
And that kind of goes along with the two dueling Volcano movies. Mm-hmm. There was Volcano and Dante's Peak. Yeah. I much preferred Volcano because it was the bigger film. They actually flood Hollywood Boulevard with lava, which is great. And Dante's Peak, it's a small town that kind of deals with this exploding volcano, which is horrible for the people in the small town, but it's not that epic. And that's what we want from disaster films, yes?
I think at this point, you kind of expect that it's happening on a much bigger scale, even bigger than the 70s, where it was buildings and planes. We're now talking planet-wide.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that has continued into the aughts and into the teens even more so, where we see, like, Contagion or Outbreak. We see these things that can affect the entire planet, or The Day After Tomorrow. Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The global warming disaster.
Yeah. Or The Road, the Cormac McCarthy written piece, where we see bigger things. It's not just happening on a small scale.
Right. No longer is the stewardess flying the airplane terrifying to people, but we have to actually see the entire planet in peril.
Well, you know, those two movies are really good because I just realized now they have pretty good leading female characters. They're still not as big as the male characters. I mean, Tommy Lee Jones, I love Tommy Lee Jones, so pretty much watch him in anything.
Yeah.
Anne Heche is his counterpart in Volcano.
Right.
And is it Linda Hamilton?
Linda Hamilton.
Is Pierce Brosnan's counterpart. So I did like that. I appreciated a little bit more that there's more women role in that.
Right.
The leads. And that whole, you know, in Volcano, like, there's a hospital in peril. They need to move the people out of the hospital. There's always that. And then there's Volcano has a lot of that guy on the street. How does he react to that versus Dante's Peak? Not so much more. That was like them in the mountain and it's coming down and that kind of thing.
And you're right, there was a lot more of a stronger female presence in the 90s disaster films in terms of them being agents of heroic action.
Yeah.
Whereas in the 70s, the women were often saved, except for Shelley Winters in The Poseidon Adventure, who saved people. But generally, the women.
But even she was seen as ineffectual most of the time and had to be helped a lot.
She had to be helped, exactly.
A lot she had to be helped. And so you do see women taking a stronger role, but very rarely the lead role. I'm trying to rack my brain as to where the woman is the lead saving everybody from the disaster that's happening.
I feel like we haven't had that yet, as far as I know.
Not really. I mean, there was Core, but that was Hilary Swank.
Hilary Swank.
And Aaron
Eckhart.
Yep. And so he was kind of more heavy than she was in lines, but she's almost there. But Core was so bad. So
Core
so
was not a great disaster.
I hate to
film.
Say like so I hate to mention that, but that's the one thing that came to mind was that movie.
Right.
Well, and the other place I go it's not really quite the same genre, but it did go in this direction. We talked about and we'll talk about it with our superheroes is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Mm-hmm. She actually was saving the world from Armageddon. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, the whole world was going to perish without Buffy, the chosen one, being able to step up. So we've seen it with Buffy, maybe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But on television.
A television show. But
I think that's telling that I think television sort of led the way.
It generally does.
It generally does. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
It's a less expensive medium. It has been traditionally a less expensive medium.
Right.
So you can take more chances with it. So you can have Captain Kirk kissing an interracial species or an interspecies.
Well, it's unfortunate saying casting a woman as the leading hero is a risk, but it is in the industry.
In the way the industry sees it,
Yeah.
True. Well, and even the latest, what I would call one of the latest disaster movies, San Andreas, they still have The Rock as the lead, and his wife as his partner in saving their daughter is a strong woman character, but she still needs to rely on him to save them.
Yes.
We've come a little ways, but in terms of disaster movies, not that big.
Not that much. I mean, we don't consider women. They always have to be helped. But, you know, the one thing I watched with Julianne Moore is in the movie where no one is getting pregnant anymore.
Children of Men.
Thank you. Alfonso Cuarón. Mm-hmm. And Julianne Moore is like this militant style, you know, so she's barely in it. She's brilliant as always in it, but she's kind of militant and a little more, I guess, stronger than your average woman in a disaster movie.
Yes. I think so. And I just wanted to see how you guys thought about these films. My favorite subgenre of disaster films of the 90s were the alien invasion disaster films. Independence Day and Mars Attacks both came out the same year in 96. And this summer we have Independence Day Resurgence, the sequel coming out. Yay. Very excited. But those were great films because they were sort of throwbacks to the 50s sci-fi invasion films like War of the Worlds and Invasion of the Saucer Men and that kind of thing. But they really played up the 70s disaster genre. Independence Day had a huge cast. Will Smith, I think that was kind of the movie that really helped break him in a lot of ways. And Mars Attacks, huge cast. Jack Nicholson, Glenn Close, many, many actors. Annette Bening, Danny DeVito. But Independence Day fell into the same kind of patriotic flag-waving, I would say almost jingoistic American response to an alien invasion from outside, the unknown. It was very pro-military, very pro-government. What I find interesting, if you saw that in the theater when it came out, the money shot scene in Independence Day is when the aliens explode the White House. And cheering. Massive cheering in the audience when that happened, which was very strange to me that it was a pro-government, pro-American film and people loved seeing the White House destroyed.
You watched it with a Donald Trump rally.
That's right.
That explains a lot of it, Jeff.
But maybe it was about bloodlust. They say, okay, now we've really got to get these aliens back because they destroyed the White House.
It pumps you up. Like, it gets you going like, oh, they're going to take our beacon of
freedom. The beacon of freedom.
Yeah. And how will Jeff Goldblum respond? That's what we always want to know. That's the important thing. And he's coming back in Resurgence, which is great. But I think interesting, Mars Attacks took the opposite tactic. It was a satire. Americans were not prepared at all for an alien invasion, and they pretty much all get killed.
And taken, totally taken by the aliens, right?
I mean,
fooled in every single way possible. It's pretty hilarious and great that way.
And they have their heads grafted onto dog bodies, and it's crazy. It's sort of like a satire of America's unpreparedness for disaster, which is sort of interesting. And then, of course, a teenage boy sort of accidentally discovers the key to destroying the aliens, which is Slim Whitman music. Which
is hilarious.
Why not?
Makes some amount of sense.
Yeah. So that was kind of a duality that I thought was interesting, those two movies at the same time. And of course, Mars Attacks was the much less successful film.
Sure, but I mean, it's successful just as far as money goes.
Right.
But I think in the long run, Mars Attacks gets better and better with age.
It's the better film, I think.
It's the better film.
As a film. Yeah.
And in fact, I mean, it really is. Jack Nicholson's character, I think, really harkens back to Dr. Strangelove in that he's playing multiple characters. Mm-hmm. It is kind of the end of the world and stuff. And so I think they're really mocking government in a lot of ways, right? In much the way Dr. Strangelove was.
Right.
And it's in its own brilliant, brilliant way. Mars Attacks goes in that same direction, I think.
Well, it's a disaster film from the director of Pee-wee's Big Adventure. So it's going to be a little weird.
Offbeat.
And yeah. offbeat, and maybe not what you would expect from a disaster film. Mm-hmm. Maybe not quite like Airplane parody level, but sort
it's
of a
smarter.
Parody.
Sure.
Smarter. Smarter.
Oh, Heather
Sorry.
Hates Airplane.
So we continue. We continue down the road, you know, and like I've seen World War Z, and obviously zombies have been a big genre and part of a disaster, I think. I've watched yes. Walking Dead all the seasons. And we're still talking about seeing yourself as a survivor, as one of these people who survived this terrible thing. It's beyond that too, right? I mean, World War Z, have you guys seen that? It's a
Oh yes.
It's an intense, intense movie.
Yes.
It just goes and goes. And that's what Walking Dead does, too, in its best, is it's just really super action-packed and constantly moving. My wife, though, refers to those people as her friends. Rick Grimes and my friends, you know, these people, yeah. these survivors, yeah. you know. Yeah. And so we're still putting ourselves there, but in a way where we're saying that we've lost control, right? I think that there's a sense that as we learn more about science, maybe as we learn about what's happened in the history, that there have been these pandemics that have killed off big parts of humanity, right. led the Black Plague, and probably before that multiple times, that as we learn about that, we're starting to incorporate that more and more into our movies and into our culture, like The Road, I think particularly.
Yeah, and they're much more pessimistic. Now, I think then the disaster movies, even in the 90s, were – because usually we triumphed over the disaster in the 90s. But right. now it seems very open-ended that we may not win over the adversity that's
yeah.
facing
yeah.
us.
Oh, well, The Road, I don't know how you get back from that, right? I mean, The Road no. looks like it's the end of humanity. There's the hope. They're the bearer of the light. But gosh, to what end? It doesn't look good.
Right.
It really looks very bad.
Yeah. And I feel like it has a lot to do with also how the internet has sort of opened us up to understanding global culture in a way. Like mm-hmm. we understand that there are bigger problems than we can even possibly wrap our minds around just because we know we have access to more information now.
That's right. I think that's a big part of it.
Which
I really
leads
do.
To pessimism and cynicism, I think, unfortunately. Yeah. And I think that's being reflected in the zombie apocalypse kind of disaster narratives, yeah.
Well, and we are facing, with global climate change, we are facing something that is much bigger than we've ever faced as a species before.
Yes.
In all likelihood.
Right.
It looks like. And so in facing that and the fact that it is well known amongst the general populace, I think that that is why it's becoming more pessimistic too.
Right.
I mean, we all worry. If you've got kids, you wonder, what kind of world am I leaving?
Yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal will not save us.
No.
Now.
Sadly.
Yes. Maybe a few years ago, yes. Yeah. But now I think we're just too cynical. I don't think that we want that kind of narrative at this point.
We want more reality and what we think would really happen instead of what a fantastical happy ending would be.
Right.
So. Well, that's where Children of Men was so brilliant, such a brilliant film. I just loved the nuance in it. It's showing you that there's a lot of religious imagery in it, but it's religious and art, and it's really calling into just how you look at things. It's really getting you to question everything that you consider even. And I think that that's what's happening now as a species and as a society that we're doing. There's a lot of gray area and we don't know the answers.
Yes. So to quote the film, we are on the road and we don't know where this road is leading. But we do know that this particular episode is ending.
Aw.
Oh, yeah.
True.
So we've reached the end of the disaster.
There are aliens right outside the door. There's no way we get out of this one.
They're waiting to ray gun us as we speak. So we have to get out of here. But I wanted to thank everyone for listening. Thanks, Rusty and Heather.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you.
And we're going to be back with the discussion of superheroes next time.
That's right.
Yeah. So please don't miss that. And this is Jeff Yance, and thanks for listening to Film Club.